There's nothing wrong with us having reboots constantly.
I'm going to have to shave my beard and everything. It's going to be like all new. I'm going to be wearing a collar. Oh, man.
That'll be Mirror Universe, Kevin.
Yeah.
All right. So you gentlemen ready?
Hey, one sec. I was just finishing my email to Derek.
I was wondering how he was going to end that sentence.
You've been fired. Doesn't like Andrew's new direction.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. We need more Steve.
I have no...
He killed us, Steve, by leaving.
I don't disagree with any of that.
All right, now I'm ready.
This show is not for the easily offended, so if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome back, listeners. It's Indie Comic Book Noise 428, and I have great news for all that are listening. We have a full show host roundup going on today.
And the site's back up.
Insert cheering noise here. And the full load of Indie Noise hosts consists of me, Andrew, and Super Steve down in the bunker.
Woo!
We also have the Canadian Deuce-um. No, that doesn't work out. We need some sort of way to link Phil and Kevin together, other than geographically. But we have
to say we're Canadians, you know.
They all must know each other up there.
Exactly.
No, we do. We met a few times.
We have.
Yeah, until you stop going to cons, then, you know.
Yeah. I got old and lazy.
This is true.
We have Phil, the Ottawa Otter. Say hi, Phil.
Hello.
And we also have Kevin, WWX, from I forgot what we were calling Kevin's place. Fortress of Solitude.
Yeah, everyone gets a cool name but me.
Didn't they have some kind of ice thing or something?
You're in the Otter's Den. That's the coolest of all.
Everyone else has like this awesome bunker or fortress. I got a little Otter's Den.
And a jug band Christmas, yeah. And that's all he's got.
Who's going to survive the big superhero war or the bombs? Not me.
Otters are cool. No one, people go to zoos all the time just to see otters. Ain't no one going up to the Fortress of Solitude. Look at the name, Fortress of Solitude. But
they'd love to if it was somewhere nice. Why even
pick up that giant key to get in?
Lonely up there.
So Indie Comic Book Noise is the podcast that's part of the Deliberate Noise Network. Thanks to Derek for keeping the lights on and keeping everything going. We have many great shows, including Marvel Noise, who you'll hear some of us on. Derek has his own show. We also have a website that is hopefully up and running again, indiecomicbooknoise.com, where you can catch old episodes all the way back to before when any of us even were on it. And when Derek hosted some episodes, too. We have a Twitter account, IndieComicBookN, and individual Twitter accounts, too. We generally keep a loose format where we just bring up things we've been reading, watching, thinking about. We also sometimes have questionable language. You heard at the beginning our warning, but I don't think anybody's been offended in a long time. I don't know.
I'll work on that. I think
people hope they're going to get offended and then they get disappointed.
Well, I can't say we don't have people that are disappointed, but I can say they're generally not offended. So, gentlemen, we're back. All four Squadron Supremes.
You need more indie references.
Yeah.
It's pretty lousy. All four, we're spawning ourselves
DNA
into the savage dragon of a world. I don't think I'm doing very well here, am I? And we're WILD cats of the recording.
What about Grimjack? Remember he went to that bar? It was like the nexus of all realities type of place?
That one's been used already.
I think you're thinking of Man-Thing, Kevin. And it's a first comics exclusive that we won't badger you nor whisper our details.
Oh, wow. We're all on freelance.
Ouch.
I may have offended some people with that segment.
Only the Warp fans for not mentioning Warp.
Hey, don't be grim.
That's dreadful, Steve.
Don't be grim, Jack. We've got plenty.
Oh, okay.
Oh, this went off the rails pretty quickly.
See here, don't miss your bus.
Can we talk about Vertigo here, or is that off brand? I'm always confused.
Nope, there is no such thing as Vertigo. Sorry.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah. It's called 13 to 19.
I do miss Vertigo, but I feel like it's been a long time since I've had Vertigo anyway.
I filed my...
some of those pills and it went away.
I filed my Vertigo books with the indie books, like when I box them.
Me too. I always consider them that way too.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Alphabetical.
Except for Swamp Thing.
That was a good point.
Only company that I put all together is Valiant. Everything else is alphabetical.
Well, me, I do companies.
Well, we had, while I had cut back, I did try some of the, I think I tried the Hex Wives and the Border Town. I mean, it was far from its heyday, but I hadn't quite given up the ghost completely.
Yeah, I didn't like those ones, but the batch before, there were some I liked.
I felt like they got it confused because they had like the Young Animal line and Vertigo. It felt like there was a bunch of weird.
That was something different. No, that was a different line. The Young Animal.
Right. But I was personally kind of confused about, wait, mm-hmm. I thought that was the replacement for Vertigo for a second.
Look at you, toeing the company line.
Wow.
It'll help not confuse me if we streamline.
Yeah, I want DC in the title of every DC line. DC Kids, DC Adults,
and DC Noise.
DC Idiots or whatever.
Now every Vertigo trade is going to have a dumb spine now because it'll just say DC.
Yeah. Yeah, Preacher brought to you by DC.
Yeah.
Well, I also imagine, we know that like in 5 or 10 years, they're going to do some, we're bringing
it'll never be the same now, though, I bet you. Because now it'll just be a name. It's just not the same quality of books as it was back, you know.
Well, I don't see how they could keep up with all the offers that those people could get from all the other companies that now exist.
You still have all your old Vertigo books that you can go back to read.
Exactly, yeah.
All those stories are not invalidated.
Yeah, that's the thing. We don't need anymore, but it's just, you know.
They rebooted the continuity, Steve, and now, like, Why the Last Man, it takes place on the same world as Fables. I can't do it anymore.
I think we all talked about the first time it went away. It was the vision of a particular editor, and she was the caretaker of it for those years, and when she left... Mm-hmm. The first time it started falling apart and, you know, they tried to revive it and it was a little love letter to what had come before, but what had come before had come and gone. So that's where we are now.
Well, like
it's
I
not
said,
in my DNA at all. It's weird. Like everyone's like, oh, that was so influential on me. And for me, it's like, it almost wouldn't make a difference to my comic DNA. It's weird.
Well, I'll always be grateful. My wife really got into Fables in a big way, and that helped gateway her into comic book reading because it was pretty accessible and wasn't... It was a very involved, interconnected universe, but it didn't require you to have read a lot of superhero comics before. I think it was kind of a nice... Well, like, it was a superhero idea of this complicated, continuity-driven universe. But it didn't involve you having to know, you know, the Bottle City of Kandor and all that jive.
But it helped to know that there were three little pigs, not two, right?
Well, I guess you're right in the sense you had to have a basic understanding of Fables and that. But that's all information that I feel
I think
most
you got
people
you there, Andrew.
of an age or a time have mastered those I mean, you also need to know how to read too. So, but yeah, I'll be very grateful for Fables. And we went to the Fables convention and used to see the panel at SDCC.
Many comics can have their own convention, eh?
Yeah. That's where a young, from working on the image book, The Activity, a young Mitch Gerards was there. So, and I bought The Activity and he sketched in the cover of it. Who knew he was going to go on to become a guy who you got to know someone to know someone to even talk to at this point. But back then he was just a guy with a table.
And a plan.
There was no plan.
I read a book recently that was like a love letter to old comics that it seems like you can't get back, but they at least got back in one little lightning in a bottle. One shot here is, and surprisingly, it's published by Dynamite Entertainment.
Ooh, I was going to say Aftershock.
You always say surprisingly when you like something by Dynamite.
I know, it's true. It's not an old reprint.
I'm not
something.
Disagreeing with you.
Although this is reprinted material because it was first published in Spanish, in the Spanish market by Planeta Comics. And it's Red Sonja, The Battle of the Red Goddess, OGN. And it just came out a month or two ago. Roy Thomas is the writer. I mean, he is Sonja's co-creator, is the best way you could say. I mean, he was the one who was writing Conan. He brought Conan to comics. He was working with Glenn Lord closely from the Robert E. Howard estate. Robert E. Howard being the fellow who wrote the original Conan stories for the old pulps. And Thomas wanted a female protagonist to play Conan off of, one that he could do a little adventuring with now and again, or who might get the better of him here or there, or, you know, let you have those shaking your head women type of moments that would be fun to do to a stoic guy like Conan. But he was still far too young in his career before he would meet up with Belit, who would be, you know, the big love of his life for so long. So he, and Valeria had already been done in the Red Nails bit, and she was a blonde. So Roy wanted to make a redhead, and he comes across the She-Devil with a sword idea, and then comes across the Sonja character in a story by Howard that's completely unrelated to sandals and sand and sorcery and swords and all that business. And he contacts Glenn Lord. He's like, hey, you know, can we adapt this story and this character from being a gun-toting swashbuckler type to being in Conan's universe? And Red Sonja's born. So, I mean, he really is the co-creator of the character. And the artist of this Ballad of the Red Goddess is Esteban Morado and Santi Casas. And Morado, after Sonja's first couple appearances in the early 70s, Roy Thomas wanted to update Sonja's look. Barry Windsor Smith, the artist for Conan at the time, had depicted her in kind of a half shirt, like chainmail shirt kind of armor.
Oh, we know what that looks like, Steve. We remember.
And Morado redesigned the armor into the chainmail bikini that became her look for, you know, the next few decades, really. Mm-hmm. So they're both very key to the creation of the Sonja that, you know, we became to know and love, basically. And, you know, then John Buscema and Frank Thorne kind of tweaked it, like the collar piece and stuff, to really make it her classic look. But this is a black and white OGN, but there's one color added in. Red, right? It's the hair and some blood and her boots and some other things are touched up in red, which is really cool. So there's a 20-page framing sequence that's also written by Thomas that sets things up, and that's drawn by this Santi Casas fella. And then there's a flashback to Sonja's origin, which is updated and retold with quite a few differences, even though it still has the classic thing of her being raped and then being visited by a like swords
maiden goddess and given the power to take on men and taken the oath and all that sort of business. But she has a lot more of herself that's brought into it. She was already learning to be a sword maiden, kind of against the rules of her culture before she was attacked and her master killed and she was raped. And she had a lot more going on with this whole sword maiden who was a goddess who was not all entirely benevolent. Pretty intense sequences, but drawn by Murado just looks incredible. And then his sequence is 20 pages, and then it ends with the end of the framing sequence that updates kind of the story that the story within a story was told. So it's a good epic, feels like the Red Sonja that we haven't had since her stories were under the Marvel banner. So this is good Sonja. It's so nice to have a good tale.
Roy, the boy knows what he's doing, Steve.
It's so true. I mean, it kills me. It's like, come on. I guess we got to squeeze whatever we can get out of Roy because he still can tell a darn good yarn in the Hyborian age.
Well, glad the art's good because, as you say with Dynamite, it's always a question mark. I mean, not to knock the fine people there, but, you know.
They didn't put together the creative team, though. They're reprinting this from the... It was a Spanish graphic novel.
So even when they do something right, they
still... Yep. They just reprint it in the States.
Well, I'm sure they have 47 variant covers, so... All right, boys. I have something old or something really old. What do you feel like?
Something really old.
All right. I went...
It's going to be an animal one.
And as you gentlemen know, I don't read proper books that often unless they're usually about comic books. So I requested for a recent celebration that I get DC Comics Before Superman, Major Malcolm Wheeler Nicholson's Pulp Comics by his granddaughter, Nikki Wheeler Nicholson.
I feel like you're breaking some rules here.
Well, if it's bothering you, I'll have you know.
No, that's okay.
That this is, it's not from Warner Brothers. It's by Hermes Press.
Yeah, I guess that's a loophole.
And it's like we're covering an artist edition from IDW. And what I was unsure about, it's a regular hardcover book. What I didn't know, where I think it's a bit of a failure in the marketing, is it's only maybe a quarter about Malcolm Wheeler Nicholson, and it's mainly actually reprints of the actual comics from the 30s. What they did was it was an anthology for the most part, so they just pulled out the various characters and collected them. And I felt that this should have been advertised more. I mean, it's not really my jam. I think we've talked about comics from the 30s aren't really anything that I'm that into. But it's neat seeing them. But I thought this was going to be all about Major Wheeler Nicholson. Because I had an idea of the man. You know, I knew he was a military guy, and I knew he was involved with DC, and I pretty much figured he got swindled out of it because he was no longer part of DC. And I know back in those days, the publishers were not always super above board, unlike today when all the major corporations treat everybody really well.
Wow.
But I didn't know that he was a legit military man and that he also wrote pulps. And so what he was doing was he was adapting his pulps into these comic strips that he wrote, and that he had contact and he knew about the Superman. There's some implications here that maybe he was setting up to have Superman printed and he got squeezed out. And same with some of the, you know, obviously he was around for the first issues of Detective, but not by the time they get to Batman. And it's photos of him and his family. He's an interesting guy, and I thought it would be more of that. And I was glad they put in covers of the pulps he was published in. And then when I got to the first comic, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. They're going to show some of the comic. And then they have another little chapter, and then it's another comic. And I'm like, well, I guess it's all that comic. So I just feel that marketing should have... Because I'm sure there are people. Look, I think I've seen one Golden Age DC comic before Batman in my life. I mean, I'm not a Golden Age guy, but I think these are hard comics to come by. Kevin, you deal in high-end back issues. How much late 30s pre-Superman DC comics do you normally truck with?
Zero.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, Kevin, you're the Golden Age guy.
Yeah, totally, that's me.
So I feel like... I mean, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe these are common as dirt, but I have a feeling that if you really wanted this stuff, this is pretty cool, and you get to see these Barry O'Neill character. Like, they're just characters I don't know, but it's nice. It's reproduced in color, and obviously the proportions are of a hardcover book and not of the full pulp, which is kind of sad.
And can't you see these same characters in the League of Regrettable Heroes
book? You pretty much can. I mean, I'm not super thrilled that the Chinese villains are literally yellow, so, you know, could do without some of the great comic tropes of the 30s, but it is neat to see this stuff, Bob Merritt, and it's these adventure characters, sort of the precursor to your superheroes. And I guess Nicholson Wheeler also wrote historical pieces, and it's neat. I do like the artists from back then, the racist tropes notwithstanding. So after that, the subsequent chapters are mostly just describing the character you're going to see and then a reprint. But I don't know, I just felt it was a missed opportunity for them to reach fans of reprint old comics to say, hey, this is actually a bunch of comics. It's not just about this guy's life. In fact, it's very little about his life. So I was a little disappointed because I would have rather had more of actual words and less, you know, maybe one or two of these. But I feel like if you guys like late 30s adventure comics, you know, run out and get this thing. I don't know where else you'd find it. Like I said, I've only seen one Detective Comics pre-Batman. And it's an interesting history. But I know, Steve, sometimes you read some of these history books, too. I didn't know if you'd gotten to this one.
No, I do love history books like that, though.
Yeah, so it's interesting. And I do feel, I mean, obviously his granddaughter is going to portray it like he was the wronged party, but I can't really fault, I don't think it's an unreasonable assumption that because these things turned out to be worth a lot, even back then, I mean, yeah, no one knew the comics were worth a lot, but the way they quickly turned Superman into movie serials and radio shows and all that stuff, like, I think they knew there was money to be made, and it's not like it's unreasonable to see people get sort of tricked out of things. Yeah, I guess he had to go to the two, Donnefeld and them, to get financing. And then, you know, due to the financing, that let him, they had to declare bankruptcy right before Superman. But yeah, there are letters between Siegel and Schuster and Wheeler Nicholson. So yeah, it was a total fast. I was glad to read it, glad to see a bit of this, because I know she was given tours at conventions and talking about it. But Hermes Press is the book, DC Comics Before Superman, Major What's Malcolm Wheeler tank? Nicholson's. I do not know, but
so it's one of pretty, quite a bit usually.
Yeah, if one of you gentlemen is curious, this might find its way in the mail to you. If one of you gentlemen would like. I like it, but it was also, like I said, a lot more comics and a lot less things, and like I said, the 30s comics, not so much of Andy's main cup of tea. All right, Kevin, was that you opening an action figure?
Of course it was. Isn't this action figure noise?
Yeah, and if that sounded suspiciously like the Hasbro plastic.
It's the right density and crinkle.
All right, Kevin, out with it.
Don't you usually have to open the tape and then the cardboard layer, and then you can sort of get in at the plastic? It's only when the cape gets stuck inside the one of the layers and you're like trying to force it through because it gets stuck.
No, usually you got to cut from the outside, like the jaws of life. You got to go in.
You know what? I can't decide on those weird rubber capes, if cloth would be better or if it would look cheap.
It looks cheap.
Yep. Really cheap.
Because the old rubber cape on Citizen V is a bit much, I feel. But maybe the...
Really?
Yeah, it just... I don't know. It looks so static.
I'm looking at him right now. He looks pretty fine.
He's going to mess me up for talking trash.
Well, right behind him is Deathlok. And he's taller.
We're going to have to save the show here and talk about more comics.
Yeah, I thought we were doing an indie comic book noise. You guys are going DC, Marvel.
Tried to give Kevin the nice segue.
Yeah, I'll just take over.
If I was allowed to bring Valiant back on the show. I know it's been in high demand.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with Valiant.
You know why we have to do some Valiant? Because favorite writer of the show, Fred Van Lanty, and artist Rento Waits, I guess. I don't know. I'm terrible with these things, Andrew. They launched a new book called Psylords.
I feel like I've been hearing a lot of press and public. Maybe I'm in the Fred Van Lanty bubble, but I feel like this book's been getting some heat and getting some attention.
I mean, it's a number one.
Was it an existing property? I don't remember Psylords from back in the day.
Yeah, it's a lesser known thing. I think it's one of those later run books. I think it's still got a decent run though. Like, it's not one of those, it's not Bad Eggs or something. Mm-hmm. That's for the Valiant fans.
All right, now that he's satisfied, let's move on to the...
Exactly. I got the pre-order edition, of course. You know, once you get into getting something, and then you just continue getting it, you're like, I guess so.
Well, I think it's smart. Doesn't Valiant have all those, like, they did a comic book with a etched glass for a cover and metal and all that stuff? Like, I think it's smart to cater to your fans.
Yeah, I mean, you're paying for, well, not really paying. I don't know. Maybe some comic shops say, hey, I want the full amount. But I just like, hey, give me the pre-order bundle. And like, you're locked in for X number of issues, X number of money. But you're not, it's not like I pay all that money right away for the issue. Like, I just pay them as the issues come out type of thing. I don't know. It's just. I could see some comic shops doing some kind of weird gymnastics over stuff like that.
Well, mate, like I said, reward your fans, give them something different. What's the subscription cover? Is it just a different cover or different other stuff too?
Yeah, it's a different cover. And you also get like extras. Do they still call it DVD extras? Blu-ray extras? Digital... download extras?
I don't know. Do you get a digital download with it?
No, but you get like it varies, but you see all the covers, you get usually some kind of process. Like usually some script pages, sometimes like the colorist will take you through the issues, like someone part of the creative process will take you through the issue or explain stuff. Like, the obviously, like, I would say, like, I'm a Valiant fan, but I'm not so much that I would know, like, everything about Psylords. Like, I might know,
step back. Give me a break. You're a big fanboy of Valiant.
See, I was going to say I'm a big fan, but then I don't really know anything about Psylords. So I'm like, is someone going to call me on the big fan? They're like, Kevin, well, you didn't know that book. And I'll be like, you're right. I'm a fraud. Like Exo Manowar and like those, I would say I'm way more familiar with. Like this, outside of like knowing that, like in the original book, they like went off planet and like they had powers and stuff. Like and it's like they have different colors and they kind of look Green Lantern ish.
Same idea in this new one. They go off planet.
Yeah, it's off planet. I'm pretty sure it's off planet. Some of the background material goes into like pointing out some of the Easter eggs and stuff which is fine for me because I like read it totally. Like, I'm like, okay, weird words or stuff is going on here. And, you know, it doesn't really bug you. You're like, oh, I guess they'll reveal this later on. But, like, these are concepts that were in the original series. So I assume if you know that stuff, you would have been geeking out over that stuff, right? And me, I'm just like, different words. But I think the best way to describe this is like a prison in the Guardians of the Galaxy first movie. Like, this is basically that type of setup.
Oh, okay. That sounds
good. I don't think it's, like, super humorous or anything, but it's like this, people are hearing a voice, and then they're, like, talking to a voice, and it's like one of them is trying to, they can talk to all of them, and that, like, trying to spring them type of thing, and then some of the guys are like, ah, I can spring myself type of thing. That's basically the first issue, I would say. I mean, there's not any, I don't know, crazy, I don't know, something else, I guess. Like, we're not going off-world and all this other continuity is being thrown at you. Like, it's basically a setup piece. I mean, there is a moment when one of the characters uses, like, Wolverine claws. So I started thinking about, like, Legion of Superheroes or Green Lantern. I'm like, I'm sure one of those guys has formed Wolverine claws at one point out of light or a construct, right? Got it.
Not that I can think of.
That'd be weird.
Well, they're kind of before Wolverine. If they don't come out of your skin, they have them ninja weapons that are like that, too. Those, like, cat's claw type ones.
That's true, too. Yeah. Yeah. And the art is kind of like, I guess it's kind of, Maybe like that recent Green Lantern book. It's kind of evokes Alien and like some of these more, or even Dread. Like some of these more, like, darker, grittier type of atmospheres. And I kind of felt like Andrew at one point because one of the guys escapes his cell, but like the floor disappears beneath him. And there's a sound effect, but I'm like, storytelling, is it 100% clear what happens? You see him, like, he's like, oh no, oh crap. And then there's, it's supposed to be like the sensation of like the floor is moving, and then you see him falling, but I'm like, I'm not sure if this is the most effective use of, like, I don't know how you would, like, maybe if you see the actual floor and, like, the more of a, you know, when someone's jumping from rooftop to rooftop, like, they would show, like, the multiple images of what, like, maybe that would get across the issue. Like, you've seen this in, I think it was War Mother, Andrew, where there was that one sequence and you were like, what exactly is occurring here? It's not 100% clear.
Yeah, I felt sometimes with Valiant, the attractiveness of the art overtook the storytelling in certain limited instances. But I will say for Valiant, they do seem to make it very new reader entry on these, on the number ones I've read anyways.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, this one is definitely super new reader friendly. And then they even have, like, for the bonus content, like, Ben Lanty goes into, like, what his process is whenever he launches, like, one of these books, since he's done several. And he says, well, he'll, like, read the original one, and then he goes through all these, like, steps type of thing. And I'm like, that's cool.
Usually I like space prison comics, but I feel like I'd want humor in it, though.
There's a little bit of stuff, but I don't know, like, I think he even describes, oh, it's a fun book or something, and I'm like, I don't know if I would exactly use a fun book to describe it.
So you had a horrible time?
I had a good time.
How'd the stopwatch do, Kevin?
On a scale of 1 to 5, maybe a 3, like, in the middle, like, good, but not great, but not bad.
The kids all want to know
where this is going. and what kind of, because this barely gets us like wherever we're going. We have to do the heavy lifting first.
Yeah, you gotta try two issues always before you make a decision.
Weren't you on the hook for a month? Weren't you saying you're now on the hook anyways?
Yeah, I don't remember if I think it was more than four. It was probably something like eight issues or something. The other interesting thing about the pre-order thing is your, a lot of things. You know, there's some kind of plan, and you're like, is this only going to be like eight issues long or something? But some of them would be like 12 issues or whatever, and then they would like have another pre-order block, or sometimes they're in four-issue blocks. But some of them are pretty big, so you're like, okay, so it's not just going to be a few issues and then you're out. So I think this was a significant chunk. So yeah, I'm totally on the hook for all that.
Look at you. You're such a big player now. You're just like, I don't care. I'll buy them all.
Well, there was one I was actually debating on because I'm like, I don't know if I want to. Because it just said killers. And I'm like, that's fine. I looked at the creative team. I'm like, that's okay. But I'm like, not that I'm opposed to new characters, but I'm like, there was no hook. And then later on, I find out, like, oh, Ninjak and a bunch of guys. And I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I should
pick
that up. Like, usually, like, 100% of Valiant, now I'm getting. Like, it used to be, like, whatever. Like, there used to be, like, a Quantum and Woody, maybe an Exo or something else I wasn't reading. But I'm pretty much at 100% now.
Does your store normally have rack copies or just subscription ones?
Probably usually subscription ones at this point.
Yeah, I feel like I used to see a lot. I don't know if they've cut down the number of titles or what, but I feel like I just don't see the number of, I wonder if they're more, much more subscription based.
Well, they seem to they'll end their titles and then kind of start over again with less titles.
They were trying to push the envelope before with like sometimes 10 books. And that's when I wasn't buying everything. And I was like, that's really,
no, for a company, I mean, like that, like, I think
like 10 is quite
four or five books. So is good.
For quite a while now, they've sort of held the line at like six books, which is fine, which is pretty good. I can handle six. Of course, if someone comes on I really don't like, I would just be like, I'm not buying that. Like, the Britannia or some Supernatural, and like,
oh, that looked good.
Times I'm Britannia. Like, I really had no interest.
I have the first issue or two.
Yeah.
I thought it looked pretty cool.
Holding the line at $6.99.
Stop bringing DC into this.
Hey, they're now an independent company. They have that fledgling parent, Warner something or other, that's barely keeping the lights on.
They're gonna do so bad that Dynamite's gonna buy them up.
Hey, Dynamite had the Batman and Shadow book.
There you go. It's a head start.
All right, Phil. What have you got for us?
I got three books in the mail because I had the Foot Soldiers. I had some of the old, like the original issues, but I always wanted more and just could never find them. So I got the three volumes, except the third volume came in today and it wasn't the book. Instead, they sent me Blackheart Billy by Rick Remender.
What? All right, but I don't know what Foot Soldiers are unless we're talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Is that what we're talking about?
No, this is the one by, I could have swore it was Dark Horse that started, but I guess it was Image because my first book is Image, but it's by Jim Kruger and Michael Omen. And it's basically in the future and these like kind of Martian robot-y things, they call the Beatles, kind of destroyed the world a bit. And these kids are kind of lured to the superhero graveyard and they all kind of take a piece from a superhero. So like one guy takes these stilt shoes.
Wow.
Which is such a useless power, but another guy, he's blind and he grabs these rags, which can make him see and heal people and stuff. Another guy has these boots that he can just stomp things. One thing that bugs me though is that, like, why not take more powers, you know, like while you're there, like take some from some other superheroes. But I don't know why, but it just really appealed to me at the time. So I finally I didn't even know there was three books. So I ordered them all in. And the first book is colored. I kind of prefer it black and white, like the original way. But it's basically them just fighting the Beatles and stuff. You guys never read any Foot Soldiers?
I think no. I heard about them, but I never read any.
None for me.
Yeah, it seemed they must not have printed a lot or something, because I could never find them before. And then the second book, it's printed by stupidest company name ever. I don't know if it's AIT or ALT, and then Planet Lar.
Oh, yeah. I've been talked about them a lot before.
I like their books, but I hate that name.
That's because it stands for Astronauts in Trouble. And if you put an A, you get into the front of the previous catalog. Well, the front or the back.
The way they print them, I guess they print the other two. They must have reprinted the first one too, because this is where he did the rest of them. And it's beautiful, black and white. I don't know, it just feels nicer. But the second miniseries is them. Each issue is them meeting a new supervillain, and it's really neat. One guy. If you're looking straight at one of the villains, if you look straight at him, you can't see him. Like, you have to be looking out of the corner of your eye or something to see him. Like, that's his power. Like, it's just some simple stuff like that. But there's a lot of loose ends in this series, like an old man that leads them to their powers and you never find out more of them. There's one of the graves in the superhero graveyard. It says like none of the characters can read in the future except for one, because it's just not as common, you know, like no schools or anything. And it says, whatever you do, don't wake up this guy or whatever. And it's one of the guys they wake up and he ends up being a villain and they kind of leave him hanging. Like, so I'm hoping the third book kind of wraps it up. I have to order it again now, but I'm hoping it kind of wraps up some of these loose ends, but yeah, it's definitely worth getting. I would get the Planet Lar books, though, if you do get it, and not the colored version. I've also read Super Patriot miniseries by Robert Kirkman. You must have read that, Steve.
Is that an old one?
Yeah, this was an older one with Corey Walker and Robert Kirkman. I want to say before Invincible. Because he was a big Savage Dragon fan. And so I think this was his first Image. I'm not sure, though. I can't say that for sure.
Yeah, I definitely read a few Super Patriot solo things, but I just don't remember so long.
Yeah, this was one where he's teamed up with his kids, his daughter and his son. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I used to like Super Patriot a lot. And also, I guess that's it. Yeah. Yeah, other than that, I've mostly been reading like Jack of Fables, and I forget what the other one was.
Boy, we're all reading old comics, except for Kevin. He's keeping
us... Yeah, I've been reading a lot old.
Lately. Keeping us current. The fresh hot off the... I haven't been to the comic store in forever, so...
Well, I think it's because I'm so into trades now that it's... I need it to catch up. So I'm buying a lot of older trades.
I've been getting so many nice, big art books and... You know, kind of books about comics and stuff that have been piling up that I started just grabbing them when I don't want to get too much into like a narrative, you know, and start picking things up and looking at art and stuff. Like I got, I think this was just from a few months ago, this year, 2019, is the from Dark Horse, an oversized hardcover called Grunt. And it's the art and unpublished comics of James Stokoe.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
And which is great. I mean, it also it has this really funny first few pages are this hilarious like self-portrait framing sequence where it's a little comic strip where he introduces himself kind of as a rare to find but easy to provoke like creature in the wild, and they like dig him up and try to cage him, and now you're getting to see his artwork. And you know, his detail drawings, some of them, it rivals Sergio Aragonés's Gru scenes in some cases, as far as, you know, you're looking at all the different detail from the awnings on the buildings to everything else. And the coloring, too, his interesting color palette has become as much of the art as his detailed compositions is really, you can tell when something's a Stokoe drawn and colored piece of material, that's for sure. There's stuff from Orc Stain, from Wonton Soup, from his Alien stuff. There's some Marvel covers and variants for other books like Headlopper and Black Hammer and stuff like that. You said
it was all unpublished stuff, though?
No, there's some unpublished comics in there and sketches and stuff, but then it's also kind of an art retrospective, so it's got, like I said, the variant covers for different books and stuff that he's done.
It's very up-to-date, too.
Yeah.
It's got, like, aliens and stuff.
Yeah. Like I said, the pages of sequential art are there, as well as the pinups and stuff. But no mention of that baseball book, though.
You know what's funny? I was at my Chapters the other day. They're, like, stocked up. They keep that book stocked. Like, you should see all the copies they have. I gotta get rid of mine.
The shipments finally came through. I kept mine. I think it looks pretty.
I do. I did like it.
Yeah, there's no reason to.
If you drew it, I like it automatically.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Another art book is that was a Kickstarter that came, is The Art of Plug, Volume 2. Over 350 pages, a huge volume, and I had gotten the first volume as well, and it's from FPG, FPGUniverse.com, and that's Mike's Plug and Friedlander who put the book together. And although this was a Kickstarter, the first volume ended up available everywhere from Amazon to everywhere else, so I'm sure this one will be if it's not already too. But this has hundreds of more pages of scans of original art from Mike Plug's 70s Marvel stuff, his work on Man-Thing, Frankenstein, Ghost Rider, Werewolf by Night, Planet of the Apes, the black and white magazines and stuff. And it's got storyboard and concept art for The Dark Crystal and John Carpenter's The Thing and the Bashki movies, Lord of the Rings and Wizards. It's so good. I love this stuff.
Wizards. Man, I think that was the one I think that I didn't... I liked generally his movies, but I think Wizards might have been the one. Hmm. Was that the one with like the rock and roll soundtrack in it?
Starlin worked on that one too, Wizards.
Yeah, I feel like there's something there, but maybe at the time I just wasn't ready for it.
And then the last one I read that was getting me into just digging on looking at different art, I picked up an issue because it was their silver anniversary 25th issue. I always see it in previews and it always looks interesting. It's a UK mag called Illustrators and it's square bound, nice heavy paper, beautifully printed, but it's fairly expensive. And even with the discount, that
comes with things, right?
Not this time it didn't, at least, okay. But I don't know if it does or not, but it was a, pinup like tribute, celebrating like pinups as mm-hmm. their 25th anniversary. And the main feature was like 30 plus pages of Milo Manara art, which is always awesome to look at. Then there was another big feature on Greg Hildebrandt and Art Fram, who was like a, old classic pinup type artist painter whose models kept losing their knickers or like their skirts would be lifted up, you know, by a puppy or get caught in a doorknob or something. He kind of came up with that whole trope and popularized it in pop art. And then a bunch of Margaret Brundage's pulp art too.
Whoa, I got that book of hers. Yeah, her stuff is the best.
And then it ends with a gallery of Alex Raymond's pinup art on one magazine. If anything subject matter or an artist that they're showcasing in Illustrators magazine catches my eye, I'm not going to hesitate to pick it up now because this was quite a package. Really nice.
Yeah, I found a new pop culture auction site, Hakes. I'd never heard of them. They said they've been around 50 years now. And they were auctioning a bunch of Hildebrandt paintings, I think from the cards. you know, those different trading cards from different ones.
Yeah.
They had some framed paintings.
I have a concept pencil sketch for one of his White Queen cards.
It looked like some nice stuff, but I was like, whoa, that's interesting. But I'm always wary on an auction site I haven't used before. I mean, mind you, it can't have as much fraud as eBay, but still, you know, at least that's the fraud I'm used to versus some new place. Why, Kevin, do you use a lot of Hakes?
No, I just know of Hakes from that magazine that shall not be named.
Yeah, so it was funny when I commented on Twitter, Hakes replied to me like, hey, come check us out. And I did. It's just weird that they do everything, like any kind of pop culture, you know, vintage signs and pins and badges. And so, I mean, I'm sure they're legit. It's just weird when it covers every type of, not just toys and comics, but all this other stuff too. And that always makes me nervous. All right, boys, are you ready for some more talk?
And what kind of talk, Andrew?
Some Judge Dredd talk? Some 2000 AD talk?
Oh, I've been filling my ear holes full of Dredd, so I actually read some Dredd, too.
Well, I picked up Judge Dredd, The Cursed Earth Uncensored from 2008.
Uncensored? You might have a better version than me.
And this is the oversized printing that I think is... I guess I should have checked the date on this. 2016. Looks like this came out. I know this material has been reprinted endlessly. For those of you unaware, 2000 AD is a English sci-fi anthology book created in the late 70s. And the most famous character is Judge Dredd, who's had at least a couple movies, video games, and other media appearances. Because it was an anthology piece, the chapters tend to be small, but it was weekly. The issue numbers are called progs. And these, The Cursed Earth was therefore told over many different progs. So you're looking at approximately 1978 is the date on this. And it's progs 61 to 85. And a lot of this is written by Pat Mills, one of the founders, and those of longtime listeners know I'm a big fan. Also John Wagner did a lot. And then Jack Adrian, a.k.a. Chris Lauder. What's interesting about the John Wagner stuff is in the credits of it, he's listed under his weird pseudonym. And I guess that was... I know a lot about this from here, but I didn't know they did it over there. So it's T.B. Grover. And what's really funny is when they started their Eagle Awards, T.B. Grover actually won for favorite UK writer. So he won under his pen name, purportedly, according to Steve McManus's book The Mighty One. He understood that Wagner came in after listening to a radio play in which a distraught youngster announced to his ma'am that he had just been duffed up by Tubby Grover. So I think it's funny that, like, all these guys had to work. And then I saw another story, I don't know how true this is, that the publisher asked that he use the pseudonym to make it look like he wasn't writing so many segments. Again, you never know how much of this stuff is sort of apocryphal tales. But what's interesting about the English comics is they tend to have like a splash of color on the first page, and then that's it. So maybe a page or two of color, and then the rest are black and white. And so it's usually like about 7 pages of story. Other thing that's I find interesting is it tends to just be art, script, and letterer. At least on these, I don't see inker credits. So I'm guessing either they don't use inkers or it's part of it, maybe just for these particular ones. But again, this is, I believe, 78, 77, somewhere in that range. And The Cursed Earth is somewhat famous. The broad outlines are Judge Dredd has to get the vaccine from Mega City 1 to Mega City 2. And those are both giant... The coasts have become entire cities. And the middle of the continent is...
The Cursed Earth.
Is the Cursed Earth. There's nothing there. So, you all are in Mega City 1, so you have nothing to worry about. Yeah. I, in Mega City 2, need that vaccine.
Yep.
Actually, Kevin may be in the cursed earth, but I think Ottawa still made it to Mega City 1.
Really? I'm not in Mega City 3.
So. Was it for you guys in your nice hedonistic ways out there where you wouldn't need that vaccine in the first place, but...
So, well, I like that Mega City 1 seems to almost get Chicago in, too, if you look at the maps. But what's simultaneously interesting and super depressing is that this book came out 40 years ago by, like, a couple of very young British creative types. And if you strip away, like, the laser bikes and all that, not a lot's changed in America. It's kind of like the internet's come, and this still reads like a pretty spot-on parody at times. And I'm like, man, I thought we'd come a little bit of the ways till you see yourself through someone else's eyes.
Good old dystopian futures.
And the other thing I love is it's the art duties flip between Mike McMahon and Brian Boland, who I both love, but both don't seem to be very similar at all. And normally it works okay, but sometimes it's just like a jump, because McMahon is very, like, has a lot of busy flash going on. Yeah. And, you know, Boland's very classical and clean. So it can be fun flipping. I just thought it was fun. I mean, obviously, now, back then, they're not thinking that. Oh, go ahead, Steve. Sorry.
Andrew, is your version that you're reading color or black and white?
The opening splash is in the color, and then the rest are the black and white.
Cool. Because it was originally printed as the progs in black and white. But I first got introduced to Judge Dredd when Eagle Comics in the early 80s, I'm guessing 83, 84, started reprinting that storyline, but they reprinted it in color. And it was awesome other than seeing Boland's stuff with the, what was the Camelot 3000, that's where I was more familiar with him from doing the mainstream stuff. And then seeing this material was like, it blew me away. I loved this stuff. And after they reprinted the Cursed Earth traveling between the megacities story, they reprinted the Dark Judges stuff. So it's like two of the best storylines reprinted and in color. And I really hooked me right into that Judge Dredd stuff. And I always enjoy getting, I've got a few good oversized, like hardcover reprints of that material, but I always dig that stuff. The Judge Anderson stuff, the with the Sonic Psy quality. There's so many angles to that Judge Dredd world, and a lot of it is ripe for good storytelling.
Yeah, it's a fun, and they're completely they rightly have literally like Ronald McDonald in the Michelin, things that now would instantly get, in fact, back then it might have gotten cease and desist or trademark, but you could kind of slide under the radar a little, I feel. And now, yeah, it's parody, but I don't know that any parent company would be super thrilled with it. So it's fun to see those depictions. And like you say, the other thing I like that this is probably most famous with is Pat Mills came up with the whole bringing back dinosaurs via cloning like 15 years before Jurassic Park. Yeah. And they create a theme park. And obviously, once the apocalypse happens, the theme park goes south. And the dinosaurs let out, and there's one particular dinosaur who is in the middle of the arc and creates a lot of trouble and is like its own character. And I remember they had a bunch of characters in the anthology like that. And there's something to be said. I wouldn't have minded them just putting the whole progs in here, too. But I like them pulling out the stories as well. I don't know. I feel like 2000 AD has an energy to it, and because of the short story length, they really get right to it. It's super compressed. Plus, they don't really reset the table. It's not like when you read those newspaper collections, and they really beat you over the head with, like, what just happened when you're reading them all in a bulk. These actually read pretty well, because they spend a little bit of time here and there saying, he's taking the vaccine across, but it's not like they have to repeat constantly all the stuff that happened. And I remember when I was a kid and went to Ireland and would buy English comics, I always thought the weird random colored pages was always funny too. So I'm glad this trade did that, how they just have kind of, I think manga does that too, where like random, you know, splat, like some parts of it have a little bit of color, but it's generally black and white.
You get the first six pages in color.
Yep. So
remember though, when we were kids, Andrew, that used to be how we would get the movie novelizations, right? You would get, it would just be a novelization little paperback, but in the middle you'd get like eight color pages of stills from the movie. And this is before we had VCRs and stuff, and heck, before probably you and I even had HBO in our house. So the only way to relive these movies was to hope to get one of those novelizations with the photo section in the middle, or if we were lucky, one of the Fumetti books, Andrew, right? That had the
I never got the I only had the novel. No. The Fumettis were not available to me.
Even of the old Star Trek ones and things like that. No, used to get them of old shows and of movies.
Not for movies. I saw the ones from TV shows, but I never saw the movie ones. But they still do those because we accidentally ordered the Zootopia one without knowing it was just the Fumetti. I mean, it's well done, but it feels kind of pointless. Like, it's not really an interpretation now because they can just print out the stuff. It doesn't have the same charm, I feel. In the old days, they really took some liberties with the Fumetti in a way that they don't now. But anyways, Curse Earth, uncensored, by any means necessary. Judge Dredd is worships the law above all else. Although he's a little bit, I was surprised that this early on, he'd already gotten kind of soft. Mm-hmm. Like, I like him as a hard, like in the beginning, they find this town where they've sentenced this couple who stole food to die by this tornado of rats that's going to descend on the town. And Judge Dredd decides to free them. And I'm like, you know, I think a younger judge would have just let the sentence fit the crime. But he always has to follow the law. So he's constantly getting into trouble in these various interactions with different parts of America. And I feel the handoffs between the writing team are fine. Again, I can't, this wasn't really mapped out like an event would be now. So it was just kind of, I don't know how far ahead they plotted it, but it was just fun to watch them kind of put it together. And it comes together remarkably well because they weren't, I'm sure they weren't thinking people would read it this way. I'm sure they were thinking people would buy weekly comics and read them in that manner. So that's cool. But Wagner is interesting because he paired up with Alan Grant, also under that pseudonym sometimes. But I used to always get Alan Grant and Stephen Grant confused.
Yeah, ditto.
And I realized it's because when Alan Grant and Wagner came over, I think they went to work on Batman with Norm Breifogel, who worked with Stephen Grant on Whisper. And I'm like, well, at least I'm not out of the, you know, like there's a reason all these characters are kind of mixed together in time. But yeah, the whole time I was like, Alan Grant, wait, is that Whisper? No, Stephen, no, Alan, no.
Don't even get me started with the Kupperbergs.
So it's funny how my lack of brain activity keeps things interesting. But anyways, it's fun. They have Mount Rushmore, Las Vegas, the dinosaur park from a clone dinosaur, all kinds of corporate, the Jolly Green Giant, the Alka-Seltzer Kid, Colonel Sanders, Ronald McDonald.
I mean, I like how it's a British bit, right? It's a British strip that wasn't intended to be sold in America, and told by British creators for British readers. And it isn't about trying to get from one side of England to the other in, you know, in some dystopian future, but it's like their version of America, which is all that more fun.
Yes. And sadly, some of the stuff I feel is still pretty right on with the, this is probably going to be our offensive tweet for the day, some of the religious stuff and the McDonald's stuff and everything. I'd be like, oh man, 40 years with the internet, we haven't gone forward from these things in any way. But
yeah, religion's still around.
I mean, I was kind of hoping the internet would take care of that in a way, but what are you going to do? Well, I guess people now are going to pray for me is what they're going to do.
Oh no. You don't think Dredd looks a little skinny in this? Why do I think he's usually more muscular or like roided out?
Yeah. Oh, I love the skinny Dredd because that makes the armor, to me, stand out more. The shoulder pads and knee pads and all that on a skinny D dude, and seems much more post-apocalyptic.
Yeah, but not Boland, the other guy. He draws some skinny thighs.
Yeah.
Some impossibly skinny thighs. And that's not even when it's Judge Death. I'm talking about the real people.
Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, like I said, that makes the boots and his, like, equipment and gloves and everything seem that much more badass. Besides, he's out there with the lawgiver.
You know, I had to laugh, too, is when you start a story, and then he's like, stop talking. I could have arrested five people by now. And I'm like, whoa, what are you, Dick Tracy? Like, he's like, move along the story here. We've got to do this ultra-compressed thing.
Now, there's a team-up. You're right. Dick Tracy and Judge Dredd, they seem like they'd get along like a house on fire.
That would be great. I want to see that team-up.
And Ditko's Mr. A.
There's your new League of Extraordinary Gentlemen right there. When does Mr. A fall in the public domain? Is
that I was done? Just thinking the same thing. I was just trying to do the math, my friend.
Yeah, so I'm enjoying... I envision the day when Andy goes full digital, when I'll be able to really get into 2000 AD, and I've swept all this paper nonsense behind me.
But oh, saying it's not so.
I feel like it's not practical for me to... I mean, I've gotten a few, you know, issues here and there, or the free comic book day, or this or that, but I feel like it's not practical in paper form. I don't know if you guys ever pick up the floppies of it.
Nope.
Well, just some of the new stuff here and there, but that's it.
I don't know. I keep on getting a feeling that Dredd really isn't my thing.
Yeah, I've
like it's sort of like Vertigo. It's
more just.
I can't really say not my thing. It's just like I could probably read some here and there, but I don't know. I'm not super in tune with that whole scene.
Well, I think that was the smart part of an anthology. My
favorite Judge Dredd is the Rob Snyder one.
Is by having all these weirdly different stories, I think it allows you to tell a very intense, compressed story, because then you're quickly moving to the next, you know, Rogue Trooper or whatever the next anthology bit is in it. I think that's a fun style, but I think it has to be, and probably one of the problems with trying to do modern anthologies is the compression is key, because you have to really get a lot out of these little short bits.
Like, I'm amazed, like, they can keep the same thing going. Like, yeah, a guy that reads, like, lots of superhero comics is amazed another character from another country could last as long. Yeah, that's hilarious. But I imagine, like, you get, like, all these inventions and... I don't know, reboots or reimaginings or whatever to keep things going.
After it works perfectly, like stories of sailors at sea or people exploring space or Conan stories. You can, there's a limitless amount of stories. You can do things because of futuristic cities, things that are happening. You can do going out into the cursed earth and the mutants and all the wasteland in between.
He's gone into space.
There's all kinds of that world to explore. It's great.
Yeah, Dredd just comes off as a little one note to me.
I think that's why those other elements are key.
Yeah.
The death judges. Judge Anderson and all that to balance out the sort of, hey, I'm just going to do the one thing.
Right.
Although he does have a hate on for robots. So, you know, if he ever teamed up with Magnus Robot Fighter, that would be interesting too.
Or the Robusters, I love them a lot. And Nemesis the Warlock. There was a lot of great, like I said, I think for those, why the modern anthology probably has more problems is all those are like crazy compressed and just have a lot of weird ideas and they're constantly throwing things out there. And I feel that's easier than trying to tell like a modern story where you're really dragging things out, because it's hard to keep the kids as locked in. Just my theory on it.
I don't think children's books are super compressed, though.
Do they do a lot of anthologies in children's books? I thought they were mostly...
No. Well, there are some, but it's still all modern, I think. Not that I'm a super expert. I'm not going to say I read a lot of, you know, but it just seems follow the same path.
I've read a few. We read El Defo was kind of good about the deaf kid. That was a really good one. She just coming to grips with it and the hearing devices and everything. I really liked it.
I mean, when you're doing a super compressed thing, you just don't want to hit that wall of text.
Well, that's where the art team comes in. You don't describe Mega City 1. You just have this crazy European artist who draw all kinds of noodly, screwed up skyscrapers and stuff.
I kind of wondered if it would look better all colored up, but I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I think all that detail and everything, I think the color, like I said, having a splash here or there is fine, but got to be limited.
You know what's all colored up?
Valiant?
No. No, Usagi Yojimbo.
Woohoo!
I got the new number one, Andrew.
I should go get that if I can.
I hear the car driving away.
Apparently.
He's like going to the comic store to go get that comic.
Because he doesn't want to see them cross over with the Ninja Turtles.
It's just like, wait a half an hour. I'm just going to go get it right now.
You hear the brakes squealing around the turn. Here he comes back. Oh, hits the mailbox. Gets out of the car.
I also think of Homer's brain when it leaves the building, closes the door, gets in the car and drives away and he's still there. But his brain is gone. That's good stuff.
Ain't that sound of the smacking leather of the feet on the pavement running away?
Slap.
Yeah, I hit the wrong button, clearly.
Like Don Martin feet.
You people are lucky I'm still recording this. Anyways, Kevin, Usagi Yojimbo has a new home after a long time.
I didn't know if we were going to wait until you've read it, or do you want me to spoil this whole issue for you?
It's up to you. I do plan to buy it, but if you want to talk about it, the floor is yours.
Maybe you'll have more to say about it. I don't know. Like it's fine. I don't like the subject matter. I'm thinking maybe this is a me thing where I'm just like, this wasn't the greatest story for me to start in on with a new book. So I don't know if that's.
I've
read some like early stuff where it was better than fine, but. Dedicating your space to a lot of puppet theater. I don't know if that's probably on me, but not the most exciting thing for a first issue for your first issue at IDW. So,
well, I can see why you didn't want to wait on this review.
I mean, maybe there's a long tradition of puppet theater in Usagi. I don't know. I really don't know. But if you have more to say, Andrew, then keep
lobbing those flamethrowers. Keep throwing those grenades in there.
My favorite Usagi is Space Usagi.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, it's an awesome one. I think there's two minis too, but I've never read the second.
Well, off topic, I may or may not be watching a current auction of an original 1989 TMNT Usagi Yojimbo AFA 80 plus graded figure.
You got to get it for the sake of the show.
Yeah.
Put the show's petty cash budget.
Yep.
They put the petty in petty cash, that's for sure. All right, well, does anyone have anything else, or should we wrap this up and put a bow on it?
I wrapped it up 20 minutes ago.
All right,
yeah, well. I think we lost Phil somewhere in the cursed land.
I got sleepy, I'm sorry.
Well, I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in. We've been keeping up progress. Hopefully, we'll be able to continue our regular schedule. It's been an adventure here on our end, but hopefully it's smooth on your end. And we do appreciate your time. And this is where we insert our sign-offs here.
And Phil says he doesn't have a sign-off.
Nope, I have one now. You sounded very creepy when you said smooth.
I don't know that that's really a sign off as much as a commentary.
I'm trying here, okay?
Later?
Don't do a Muppet, Kevin.
Someone even gave Kevin a sign off, and this is the thanks he shows them.
Keep reading them comics. They're good for you.
No, I didn't mean steal their sign off. I meant the one they lent you.
Keep developing sentience. It's good for you. And point at someone and tell them they're to blame. All hail Computo.
Computo.
It's like the Hypnotoad.
Yo! 法の楽器で乱暴者の猿たちをなだめるな。みんな演奏がすごく上手だね。友達になれて本当によかったよ。だけどいいかい？いつでも心のコンパスを信じるんだ。